Welcome to the Strength Talking Shop podcast, where I'm your host, Matt Smith. On the Strength Talking Shop podcast, we talk to some of the leading experts in nutrition, strength and conditioning, powerlifting, and bodybuilding. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the podcast. Our presenting sponsor is Optimum Nutrition Athletics. We all know that protein is the key to muscle recovery, and Optimum Nutrition's best-selling 100% gold standard whey protein provides 24 grams of protein that mixes easily using just a glass and spoon. Gold standard 100% whey is made in their state-of-the-art facility. It's banned substance tested by Informed Choice. And with Optimum Nutrition Athletics program, you can get different products such as their Pro Gainer, which is a mass gainer, their protein snacks, such as protein crisps, bars, almonds, and cake bites. And after dominating the sports and nutrition industry for over 30 years, newly created Optimum Nutrition Athletics brings that same trust and quality that knows how to put convenient options for protein in the hands of athletes who desire to become bigger, stronger, and better at their sport. To be able to get this into your facility for your athletes, please reach out to Dave Harvey of Optimum Nutrition Athletics. His information is down in the show notes. You can also follow him on social media too as well. Dave is an awesome person. We're talking about the gold standard here with 100% whey protein, some of the best products you can get there on the market, bar none. I highly suggest that you reach out to Dave Harvey again. Down in the show notes is his email where he can get that into your facility. Thank you for Dave and Optimum Nutrition Athletics for being our sponsor. My guest this week is Chad Ikes. This is a great episode. One powerful guy, just a really awesome person. Very thankful to be able to have him on the podcast this week. So if you don't know Chad's background, Chad is a world accomplished powerlifter, one of the greatest powerlifters of all time. He's had a 1,173-pound squat, an 821-pound bench, a 755-pound deadlift, and a 2,733-pound total. He's also a coach with Courage Barbell, which he owns and operates, where he trains clients, and he's also a writer for Elite FTS. Chad is one of the people I've followed for an extremely long time. When I first got into strength and conditioning back in the day, Chad was one of the first people that I ever saw lifting. I was really inspired by his powerlifting career and just all the articles he's put up on Elite FTS, the videos he's put out. So this is a wonderful episode. We dive into a lot of different topics on his powerlifting career, how he trains his athletes, and then just the mental side of things. So thank you, Chad, for being our guest this week. Thank you to Dave and the team at Optimum Nutrition for being our sponsor of the podcast. Thank you to everybody that helps support the podcast. How you can support it, give it that 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast at. Share it with friends and family members and colleagues. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube as well. Reach out to our guest Chad this week and all of our past guests back in the archives. And everybody, stay strong. Hey, what's up, guys? Strength Talking Shop Podcast. Got a bucket list guest on here this morning. His name is Chad Ikes. So Chad is the owner of Courage Barbell. He is a columnist for Elite FTS. He's a super heavyweight power lifter. Some of his total numbers here. This is awesome. 1,173-pound squat, an 821 bench, a 755 deadlift, a 2,733 pound total. At the time, was the fourth highest total of all time. He's a multi-world record holder. We've talked for already about 25 minutes before we started recording. Chad was somebody that I found a long time ago, and I'm so thankful to have him on here. How are you this morning, sir?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Doing pretty good, Chad. Doing pretty good. Well, let's go. We'll go and dive into things here, man. So how did you get involved in this? Obviously, I just said a bunch of numbers, and now you train people yourself. How did you get involved in training?
It's kind of a two-part, I would say. I started lifting for sports. My dad had lifted on and off when I was a little kid, and he was a carpenter. So in the winter, when he wasn't working as much, I was always like wanted to go to the gym with him. And there was actually a gym in St. Charles, Missouri called Vic Canny at the time. And like, I remember going in as a kid and they had chrome dumbbells and I'm like, oh, this is like a playground for me. This is awesome. And so I'd always remembered that. And then when I started playing football, I didn't make first string my freshman year and I was just pissed. So basically in my head, it was like, dude, you got to get stronger. So I started gathering what equipment. My dad had a bench because my brother started training like a year earlier for a little bit. And I trained with him a little bit. And then when I didn't make the football, make first string on the football team, it went from there, and I started building a gym in the basement. Mm-hmm. And so, like, if I had friends, dads who had plates laying around or barbells or something, I'd like, hey, can I take those? Can I have those? And, like, just gather everything I could. And I started getting every birthday, every Christmas, I'm like, hey, can I get a lap pull machine? Can I get this? Can I get a curl bar? Can I get that? And that's basically was all my gifts for birthdays, holidays, was stuff for the gym. And, like, I just loved it. As soon as I started lifting, like, I absolutely loved it. I think partially because it was a way to control my anger issues. Like, I could get pissed at something, and I would just go bench press till I pancaked myself, and I'd be like, oh, I feel good now. I'm relaxed. And so, like, it all started in high school. And then, you know, I played football, and I threw the shot put. I went to college to throw the shot put. But we found out I had chronic compartment syndrome in my lower legs. And basically we had surgery and everything. And basically it was like, listen, this your pressure's still too high. This isn't fix it. If you keep irritating it, there is a chance you could lose your legs. So do you want to keep pushing it or do you want to stop? And that was, I go, okay, well, I don't want to lose my legs. So I stopped throwing, which kind of took my motivation to finish college away too. And, but I was still able to lift. So I lifted, and worked, and I got into motorcycles too. And, but like lifting was always constant. Even when I was living at home, I took over half my dad's garage and set up a gym. And I moved into a condo at one point that was on a slab. Well, I moved all of my furniture into the dining room and made the living room a gym. And I'm sure my neighbors loved that. And eventually I moved to this small town on the east side of Nevada called Elko. And I was lifting in the gym there, and these guys came up and they're like, hey, we're putting on a bench meet. We want you to come. And I'm like, dude, that'd be awesome. I've always wanted to see a powerlifting meet. And they're like, no, you're not watching. Like, you're doing it. And I'm like, well, when is it? And they're like, it's in 2 weeks. And I go, no way. I'm not ready to do a meet. And they're like, yes, you are. We watch you. You ready? And so they talked me into it, and I benched like, I think it was 405 or 415 raw, and I took second. And like that, I was like, oh my God, it feels so good to compete. And like, I had so much fun at the meet. And there was a guy there who's originally from Trinidad, ironically enough, was a sprinter at UNR, ran like 10 flat back in the 70s or 80s. But now he's huge and he benched like 570. And I was literally like, oh, that dude is huge. Like, I want to look like that dude. I even told my mom, I go, that's what I want to look like. That dude's huge. And so it took me about a year or two. I started training. I'm like, well, dude, I want to do a three lift meet now. And I started training, and I moved back to Reno, and I had a night job. So about a year, year and a half passed. And I go, you know what? I go, this powerlifting thing was fun, and I think I can be good at it. And that's where I kind of flipped the switch of like, let's do this. Let's actually push this and see how far I can take this. And I even ended up quitting a job that I had because I got a job with the jail as a booking clerk. And I told them, I go, okay, here, this is the meet I'm doing. I need this time off. And they're like, well, we don't know, because that's after the shift change. And I'm like, well, okay, let's change how I'm telling you. Here's the days I won't be here. You can do whatever you want about it. And I ended up getting a call from one of my old bosses who wanted me to come back to work. And I go, okay, I'll come back to work for you, but here's the stipulations. And it was like, I train at this time. I cannot work overtime on those days. I'll give you a minimum of 6 weeks notice for a meet. You cannot refuse time off if it's for a competition. And he was good with all that. So I ended up going back to that job and staying there through my whole powerlifting career.
So you essentially went all in. Can you talk about when you went all in? What was that kind of, I mean, you kind of just went into a little bit right there, but just the mindset of kind of going all in right there. Like, I don't think people quite understand what that truly means.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I don't think people understand what that means. It was basically like, you know, after I did that first meet, I started training for a three lift meet, which I did. I don't think I did that one because I moved. And then I ended up doing another three lift meet, but I was working a night job. So my training wasn't very good and the meet didn't go so well. And it was basically that decision of like, Chad, you really like this. You could be good at it. Like how far are you willing to take it? And so I took a little time and I went, no, I want to do this. And I don't care if it means changing jobs. I don't care if it means not buying a house for a while. I don't care. Like, I want to put all my energy and 100% into this and just see where I can take it. And even back, I mean, I didn't know I'd end up at the level I was at, but I thought, you know, I think I could be really good at this. Like, I think I could be at least on the world stage. And I knew it was going to take a lot of time, but it was basically just that. I don't know. It's like, it's hard to explain for me because it's easy. It's just going, okay, this is what I'm going to do, period. Like this just became the number one of my life. And it really was. I mean, it got to the point where it was like, if people called up and said, hey, we're going out tonight. I'm like, nope, I got to train Saturday. So I got to get in bed early tonight. And, you know, as my career went, man, I'm really into motorcycles. And there was a time where I had, I don't even know, like 4 or 5 motorcycles. And throughout my powerlifting career, one would get sold to get to a competition or this or that. And eventually, like, there was a point where I had no motorcycles. And that was something I absolutely loved to do. Like, I actually told myself, like, I'll never be without a motorcycle. And, well, that changed because for a powerlifting meet, I'm like, that's it. I got to get some more money. Like, I'm out of money and I need to get to these competitions and do this stuff.
What in the beginning made you think that you're going to be so successful? Was it a mindset thing? Was it you just were like, you know, I just feel like this is it. This is where I'm supposed to be kind of thing. I just wonder what that was sometimes.
That's a good question. A good question and a hard answer. I think it was more like all I ever wanted my whole life was to be a professional athlete. Like, I mean, I know there's kids that grow up and going, I want to be a firefighter. Or I want to be like all I really ever wanted to be, even when I went to college and it was like, well, I'll go be a physical therapist. I don't know. That sounds okay. And actually it was something my dad had mentioned to me. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I got to do something, I guess. Like, I mean, there really wasn't anything I wanted to do except be a professional athlete. I loved training. I loved pushing myself every day. I loved the dedication. And this, so then when this came along, it was like, you know, I didn't even know if I could make a living at it or not. I knew very few guys had made livings at it. And I don't know. I just thought, man, if I put everything into this, it'll pay. I can be good.
Right.
But like a lot of stuff. I think a lot of people could be good at a lot of stuff, but it's making that decision of how far are you willing to take it. You know, and when you get stuck at a 500-pound bench for a year and a half, are you willing to keep going and keep pushing through it and keep trying to figure out what you're missing to get it going again?
I think you just nailed it on the head right there. And you said something earlier too that I think is really important, is that you said you knew it was going to take some time. Wasn't going to be an overnight thing. Can you dive a little bit more into that? Just like you said, how long it takes to get good, right?
Well, that's something I talk to my clients about a lot right now, is because there's setting goals is really very important. And a lot of people set goals that are impossible. Like, you have to have goals that I kind of believe in goals. There's like 3 stages to a goal. But, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm going to bench 400 pounds this year. And it's like, dude, you bench 255 right now. Like, you're probably not going to hit that. Like, it takes a while. And if you look at my career from like when I my very first 3-lift meet, I totaled 1,700 pounds. It was almost 10 years exactly that I totaled 2733. So it was like, I didn't just become one of the best lifters. Like, it was a long, hard journey. It was 10 years of full on total dedication. And so I put on 100 pounds of my total every year, which is actually pretty crazy to do for that long. But even that, like, I did good and it took 10 years. Like, and I started with a 1700 pound total, which isn't great, but to walk into your first meet and do 17 isn't bad either. You know, so I started with a decent total right off the bat. And I see a lot of lifters that come up with these huge numbers and it's like, you really realize like how long this is going to take. You can only put on muscle so fast. You can only gain strength so fast.
Yeah. That's why I think powerlifting is so important for coaches, not just powerlifting, but competing. So I think competing is so important for trainers, for coaches and everything like that, because you get a sense of that time, like you said, like exactly what you're dealing with your clients and everything. They can see that, like, it took you 10 years to put all that total on and everything. Like, it's going to take some time for me to gain strength. It's going to take time for me to maybe, if I want to lose weight, it's going to take time for me to lose weight properly and stuff like that. So that's why I think, did you find from this powerlifting career, now being able to train people, those certain things from when you competed, now being able to share that knowledge with them?
Oh, definitely. I think in terms of even coaching, it helped me because I'm way more patient than I used to be. I did want everything fast even in the beginning, but I still knew, I had enough lifting experience to know that, like, this is, it's not going to happen overnight. This isn't a 1 or 2 year thing. This is kind of, I think Chuck Vogelpohl said, it's a sport of attrition. Like, it's going to take a long time, and there's going to be a lot of people that come and go who won't last. Like, so you got to have that plan to begin with. And for my clients, like, I'm pretty hard. Like, basically, if I don't tell you, you're doing it right. If I let you know, that's something that needs to be fixed. Like, I'm not a rah-rah coach by any means, but at the same point, I try to read people. And, you know, there's certain people that I have that I train where it's like, I know that if I say 3 bad things, I'm going to have to give them at least 1 good thing.
Right.
You know, you weren't rooting hard enough. Your knees were falling in. You didn't build the tension, but hey, you did sit back, and that's progress, you know? And then, so like with, I get clients, especially some of my younger clients or the guys that are just getting into power. They're like, I want to squat 700 pounds at this next meet. And I'm like, hey, that goal's like, no. Like, if you do, I'm not going to tell you can't do it, because who knows? It might happen. I go, but I think what we should be shooting for is like 650, you know? So and then if they do PR, but they're not that excited about it, I go, hey, wait a minute. You got to look back. Like, you know, here's where we were, and here's where we progressed, and we did it in this amount of time. And that's pretty good, because a lot of people have no concept. And it was funny what you said about weight loss too, is I can see people and I can go, listen, so what were you when you were 20 years old? I weighed 200 pounds, and now you're 30 and you weigh 330. So it took you 10 years to put 130 pounds on, and you want to lose it in 2 months? Like, it doesn't add up.
I saw a really funny post that was really good the other day. And it was like, they're like, screw your 12-week transformation. This was a 2-year transformation. It was somebody that lost like a lot of weight and they looked awesome. And I loved that post, because it's like, yes, let's stop with the whole, you're going to get your bench press from 300 to 400 in 8 weeks. It's going to take, you know, I think Vincent DeCenzio has talked about that before, where like it took him what, like 4 or 5 years to put 5 pounds onto his bench or something like that. Like, that people need to understand that things are going to take time. Like, for instance, I can give you a great example. Today I pulled like my last heavy deadlift until my meet in a month from here. Right. I'm shooting for 15 pounds more than I did the last meet. Some people would probably be like, oh, 15 pounds, it's not that much. That's 15 pounds. Like, some people would kill for 15 pounds, right?
Yeah.
So I think people don't understand
that. It's a time frame thing. You know, the stronger you get, the harder the gains are going to get.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, when you're first starting, you may go from a 650 or say a 600 squat to a 650 squat fairly quickly. Going from a 1200 to a 1250 is not going to happen that fast. Like, it's going to take way longer. And you just made me think of something else. I just actually had this conversation with one of my clients the other day. I'm like, you know, you could come to me and I could give you a big boost on your bench in the first couple months, and you're going to be like, oh my God, I put 20 pounds on my bench. Da, 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 da. And then you're not going to gain nothing for the next 4 years. I go, that's what you want, I'm not the guy for you. Because what I'm going to do is go, listen, we got this and this and this is wrong, and you have these weaknesses and you have these horrible movement patterns. Like, we got to start from ground zero. Like, I'm not worried about giving you a PR in 2 weeks or 2 months. I'm worried about where you are in a year.
Yeah.
Like, because if you give you those quick gains, or even with people that want to lose weight, if you give them that quick weight loss, oh, it's all amped up. But long term, that's not good. Like, let's just go to ground zero and build the base so that we can get stronger and continue to get stronger and stronger and stronger over time.
I think that's very key. The overtime, getting stronger over time. And I love that you talk about that with your clients. Like, it's not a quick 8-week program. Like, this is a long-term thing. And I think it's good for you to be upfront with them to be able to understand that too, because you can educate them on like, this is what's wrong,
but this is how we're going to get it right. This is the game plan that I'm going to have for you. Do you kind of find that is really, really successful in telling them exactly kind of how we're going to, I guess, untangle all of these, you know, problems that I see with stuff like that?
Yeah, I think people respond very good to my honesty, which in some parts of my life, people don't respond so well to it. But I think in terms of training, it is, because they know that I'm being honest with them. So that way, first of all, when I do compliment them, they know it's real. Yeah. Like, especially the people on my, the lifters, the competitive lifters I coach, man, if they get like, they light up when they get something good from me, because they know, dude, that's no bullshit. Like Chad doesn't bullshit. So like, if he said, that's not bad, they're like, in our world, that means you did awesome. And then I have a older gentleman who's 73 and just bad movement patterns, tons of weaknesses. He has some balance issues. And even in the first month, we're making some progress, but I'm like, listen, this is long-term, and here's why we're doing this. Here's what muscles we're trying to work. Like, your movement patterns are wrong. This is why your shoulder's actually hurting right now. We're building, and they don't really soak it all in, but I think they appreciate the fact that, like, this guy actually has reasons for what he's doing. I'm not just paying him and he's trying to make me move, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think they learn. I think if people learn, I think if people have, the more respect they have for a coach, the more they're going to listen. And the more you explain to them, they need to buy, because this is long-term, they need to buy into it. And I guess I shouldn't say buy into it, because that sounds kind of bad, but they need to believe in it. And if they believe in you as a coach, and you're actually explaining them and telling them and actually bringing them into the journey, they're more into it. They're invested. And I think that really helps in the gains in the long term. You know, if you go to somebody and they go, here, do this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10. Okay, now do your next set. And you're never learning and they never explain to you. Those people really aren't bought into the system or the program or their goals even, you know?
I love that you talked about that. You're on the journey with them.
Yeah.
So like when you're on that, like when they hit a PR, it's almost as if like you're a part of that, instead of you're just somebody, like you said, that just gave them a sheet and here's the exercises to do. Like you were there breaking down every technique, building upon every single weakness that you had here. And you're going to be there when there's the highs and there's going to be the lows. You're always going to be there, a part of that journey. That is so, like that right there is so emotionally invested into somebody, where coaches need to be at. And I know that's really hard sometimes, but if you can be, think in that aspect of like, we're walking on a journey together, like you will learn a ton from being able to train that client, I assume.
Right.
Yeah.
And I do, I mean, I kind of feel like I was actually had a conversation with, I had some time after my 73-year-old client, and we were just talking, and it's like, and I actually went away from that talk on, wow, you know, I'm still learning from them as much as they're learning from me. Yeah. And everybody's different. I think as long as you're in this game, you always have to be learning, and there's always going to be new things, because we're dealing with individuals, and you can learn everything you want, but every individual is still different. They have a different mentality. They have different aspects of their anatomy and physiology. They have different issues. Like I remember sitting down at dinner with, a top power lifter. And he mentioned, he's like, man, I still need to learn more. Like, I don't know enough. And I thought, Jesus, if you don't know enough, holy shit, how much more do I have to learn? it was kind of like, yeah, no matter how good you are, there's always more to learn. There's so many aspects to training people and the strength that you can't ever learn at all. Even when I remember talking to some guys back when I was breaking world records and stuff. And it's like, you're in new ground. Like if you broke a world record, now the next weight that you're going for, no one has ever done. So there's nobody you can ask, hey, how did you get to this? Because no one's ever been there. So again, it's completely new ground. And what helped me bench 600 pounds isn't what helped me bench 800 pounds. You know, my training changed through the whole progression. As I get stronger, everything changes. And now I'm still lifting and I'm still going to compete, but I'm almost 50 years old. So training at 50 and training at 20, now that's a whole different ballgame. And I actually have a group of guys that are in their 50s and 60s, and that's different too. So it's like, this is almost, and I think this is one of the things I love about strength training, is it's almost unsolvable. Like, it's a puzzle I'll never be able to completely put together.
I just had that conversation with somebody the other day. It's like, this is a puzzle I don't think we will ever solve, but it's a puzzle I love to be able to try and put the pieces together with.
Like, yeah, you feel like for some reason I don't just give up. I still keep trying.
Exactly. It's like, you'll get one corner of it and you're like, oh man, I think I'm starting to figure it out. And you're like, I don't know where this piece goes, but I think that's really important. Did you kind of find that in your powerlifting career over time when, let's just talk about that real quick. So what made you so successful in your powerlifting career, do you think? Yeah, mental.
I think it was completely and utterly my mental perspective and my being a really stubborn German. An interesting thing is that when I was growing up, I've always been the kind of kid who wants to take care of himself. I think I like taking all the responsibility if I mess up, so I don't have to blame anyone else. It's my fault. And I like taking all the glory if I'm successful. Mm-hmm. So even as a kid, I was actually telling the story the other day. I go, my poor mom, like when I was a kid and I'd get sick, my mom would want to mother me. And I'm like, hey, go to work, do your stuff. I feel like shit. Just let me feel like shit and I'll get over it. Like, I don't need any help. I don't need to be baby. Just go do what you want. And my brother and sister would, when they were, they always wanted to have friends. So if no one was home or they didn't have anyone to play, they would buck the shit out of my mom. And she tells story. I'd walk through the house and be like, there's no one to play with. All right, see you later. And my mom would be like, you'd be gone till like dark. And she goes, I don't know where the hell you even went. And I would just go wander off by myself and amuse myself. Like, I never had a problem with it. So when I was throwing the shot put, I didn't really have a coach in high school, but I would go to track camp at Mizzou every year. And so I would learn as much as I could then, but I liked training myself. Like, I liked pushing myself. And powerlifting was the first sport I ever did where I actually went, I don't know enough. Like, it was shortly after my 1700 pound total. I'm like, okay, what I'm doing is not cutting it. I go, I'm going to have to get help on this one. Like, so that was a big change for me. And I think in some respects, you know, I was 27 when I did that first three lift meet, I believe. So I was 29 when I did my first, I went to 27 at my first bench meet. And I think my first three lift meet, like when I got serious, I was 29. And I actually think that was a huge benefit for me because I had matured to that point where, like, listen, it's okay to get help from people. Like, you're still the one that's going to take that knowledge and run with it. And you're the one that's going to do the work. And that's where I started doing a bunch of research and ended up deciding, like, Dave Tate was the guy I wanted to get a hold of and learn as much as I could from him. But I think that was a huge thing. And I really started approaching powerlifting with way more of a mental status, where before with football and my lifting before, I always kind of took that meathead approach. Just be strong, just lift the weight, just outwork everybody. And that's just such a dumb way to do it.
Be more methodical, you could say. Like, you were methodical with how you trained and everything.
Yeah, like when I went to my first seminar with Dave Tate, like I literally, man, I brought a notepad and a couple pens. And I mean, I think I wrote down 40 cues for the squat that I needed to remember. And like, I went back to the gym. I was squatting 545 with no belt. Olympic style, like ass to the ground every rep. I went back to the gym and I couldn't squat 135 like Dave showed me. And I was like, okay, we're starting over then. And people laugh when I tell the story because I go, the gym I was training in, the squat rack was right by where everybody walked in. And so like after the first couple times of squatting, I'm basically just going, keep walking, shut your mouth, you'll see. Because everybody's like, are you hurt? What's wrong? What's going on? How come you're only lifting that much? And nobody could understand. Like, no, I learned new stuff. I need to rebuild. Like, nobody can understand that. And within 6 months, I squatted 7.
Wow. That's the thing that I've, when I talk with high-level performers, like high performance people, they talk, there's two things I've noticed, and you've hit them both, is they the mentality, so the mental aspect of it, and then number two, the always evolving to learn. Not necessarily, because there are times when you kind of have to like plant your feet in the ground. This is what I know. This is what I'm going to do. But being able to be open to criticism, being open to other different things. And I think you've nailed it on the head with those two things, man. Like those are the two biggest things I've noticed.
I did an article for Elite FTS a few months back. I think it was the Wisdom of Dave Tate or something like that. And I made four videos with it. And those videos are on my Courage Barbell YouTube channel. But basically, it was like the four biggest things I learned from Dave Tate. And in those things, you know, as after his seminar, I start training, I'm utilizing everything he has. And he actually had sent me a card, which is still hanging in my gym, like so many years later. And he's like, hey, if you ever have any questions or anything, call me. And I didn't really want to bother him because I knew that this is how he makes a living. Like, I don't want to waste his time with me asking him questions. But eventually I did. I go, okay, I'm going to call him. And, you know, I would be doing the program like he had explained. And I had started a team by then. I had three other guys I was training with. And like everybody would hit a wall. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, okay, here's what I need to do. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if anybody else is doing this or that. And then so I call Dave. And then Dave has this really great way of kind of guiding you to figure out what you need to figure out. So instead of answering my questions, Dave would be like, well, what do you think you should do? And da 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 da. And then he'd be like, okay, well, why aren't you doing that then? And I'm like, oh, okay, point taken. And that was kind of part of my learning process of like, hey, trust yourself. Like, and continue to learn and understand that if something's not working, make sure you give it a good try. But then if it's still not working, you got to change something. But don't just randomly change something. And don't go back to what you were doing before necessarily, because you changed from that for a reason too. So you got to keep moving forward. And funny enough that as I got better, I got to meet better and better lifters. So the better I got and the better lifters I got to meet, the better knowledge I got from them. And it was like, wow, opening up my mind and actually taking advice from people and not trying to do everything by myself. The more I opened up and the more I listened and the more I tried to learn, the better I got. And I see so many young lifters that go to the gym and they follow what everyone else is doing in the gym. And I did this as well. Like part of the reason when I went to Dave's seminar, the first seminar, I was amazed at how many things he talked about that I had thought about. But I went, hey, you know, I had a background in physical therapy. So we had used bands and stuff all the time. And one of the things I recognized from linear periodization is it's like, wait a minute, I'm getting slower. Like I was an explosive athlete. If I'm getting slower, how am I getting stronger? You know? But then I'd look around and I'd go, well, no one else is doing anything. They're all training linear. Maybe I'm wrong. And then I forgot about it. And after the seminar and stuff, I started thinking and I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I don't want to be like any of these people in this gym. There's no world-class lifters in here. Why am I even looking at them? Why am I listening to anything they would say? I should be listening to the people that are on top because that's where I want to be. Like listening to a 600-pound squatter is never going to help me get to 1,000.
Absolutely agree 100%, man. I've done that myself where I reach out to some of the best people and it's like they're the best for a reason.
Yeah.
Like they have something. It might just be the smallest little nugget, but that little nugget might add 5 pounds to your total, might add 10 pounds to your total. But then you got to think of the long-term effects of it and everything like that.
Yeah.
Think of like, this is what's so awesome for me to be able to hear that story where you went to that seminar. Think of everything that has now come forward since going to that seminar for you, from your own lifting now to being able to train clients.
Even funnier than that is that it was a good seminar. There was probably 40 or 50 people from California there. And so the next day, Dave's like, all right, at the end of the seminar, he's like, I'm going to be back to do dynamic bench tomorrow. And anybody who wants to come can come train with me. There was like six of us maybe that showed up. And I was like, what? Like you'd spent all day listening to him. Now you have a chance to actually see him put it. And I'm glad I went because I've never seen anyone bench that fast. I was like, holy shit, that's speed work. Okay. And then later I look back now and I go, well, wait a minute. Out of all those 40 people, I became one of the top lifters. And even after that seminar, I saw a lot of those lifters at meets and competitions and stuff. And I'm like, hey, how come you're not doing what you learned at the seminar? Oh, I did that for a couple of weeks. It didn't work. So I went back to what I was doing. And I'm like, and then so for the next 4 years, as I'm getting better and better and better, those people are still right where they were.
That's what I never understand is the whole what, like look, I think of this in the weight loss in a way too, like everything. It's like, it's not working for 1 or 2 weeks. Let's just go ahead and throw it out. It's like people are constantly always having to change everything. If you just make small little changes over time, you will see massive results over the long term. It kind of goes back to everything we've kind of talked about is like, think of everything in the long term. Don't think of it as in a short period. Like, I think too, like being able to see the lifters too, as well, like you talked about with Dave, being able to see him actually do the speed work. Like, if you're a coach, go find great coaches in your area. Go fly somewhere, go drive somewhere, obviously, if you're able to and stuff like that. And, I think that's a great lesson that you say right there, Chad.
That's where even now with my groups now, sometimes I'll train with different groups. Sometimes I train on my own, but I'd like to at some point train with all of my clients, like actually train with them.
Oh, wow.
So they can see, dude, this is okay. Whoa. When Chad said he wanted intensity, like, and they're struggling to keep up with me. And I'm like, see, this is how fast I want you to go. This is how much intent I want you to put in. And like, speaking of that, I've actually had a few people, and I want to start offering more like private seminars or stuff where even people can even come over and go, listen, come over for a weekend. Let me just go over everything with you. We'll do a train. You can actually see what I train like and actually have somebody stand over you and go, no, this is the position. And if they can't feel it, I can put them in the position. Like, that's something you can't do reading an article or a book or watching a video, like actually having someone there that's walking around you, looking at you from different perspectives. And when you're not in the position, they're going to do what it takes to make sure you understand the position and you feel the position. Even in terms of like every client I have is weak rhomboids, and trap dominance is a huge problem. Yeah, and a lot of times they're not going to understand that till they actually have me behind them screaming at them and grabbing their shoulders and going, no, this is the position you need to be in. Or going, listen, we're going to bench till you get one of these right. So at least they leave going, oh, okay, I know, I got it.
And that's the sign of a great coach, because they're leaving that session much more educated than when they first came in. And then two, they're getting in the right position that they're supposed to be getting in. How many times would you just go through a session, you just go through the motions, and you're just creating bad habit on bad habit on bad habit and everything like that. You know, you made a really good point earlier in the fact of just being able to go visit. And then two, when you go visit somebody, you might not do something the same way. You might even disagree a little bit with it, but at least be an open book to be able to say, like, you know what? I kind of like that. That's like, Rhodes and I talked about this. There might be some stuff from bodybuilding I might be able to use for this. Mm-hmm. There might be some stuff from CrossFit I might be able to steal from this. And always be molding in the stuff that you like, but also don't ever do anything that you wouldn't do yourself and you don't know how to do yourself too as well.
Yeah. I think, like we talked about, the tidbits from individual people. You know, I always try to give credit to if I learn something from somebody, I always try to give credit. So I'll be like, hey, here's a little secret, do this and do this. And I learned that from so-and-so. Because you pick up these one little things, and those one little thing, you know, one thing you learn from this guy and one thing from this guy and one thing from this guy, those things add up really big in the whole picture. And again, like, it was funny. One of the greatest things about the WPO was when I finally went like professional. And, like, everybody would come in a couple days early because everybody was dedicated. Like, anybody in the WPO was like seriously dedicated to lifting. Yeah. So we would all come in a little bit early to adjust to the time and relax and stuff. And like, there would be times there'd be 10 or 15 of us in the lobby, all just bullshit and telling stories and talking training. And it's like, I could be talking to somebody who does linear periodization that I don't particularly am not a fan of, but I could learn a lot of great stuff from them. Like, it didn't matter to me, like, the different theories. In fact, I would rather talk with somebody who has different theories because I might learn even more. You know, I never really gave a shit if, oh, you're not conjugate, whatever. I'm like, I don't care. Like, which brings me to another point too. There was a point when I remember being in, I think it was one of my first WPL meets, and I'm like, holy shit, dude. Like, look around you. Like, and you name all these top lifters. It's like, dude, the 15 or 20 of the strongest people in the world are in this room right now, and I have most of their phone numbers. I'm like, I could create the greatest program in the history of programming. And like, I'm going to suck up all their information. And I look back now and I go, what an idiot. Like, the only thing I really learned from that is like, wait a minute. Here's 20 of the top guys in the world, and every one of them trains different. Maybe it's not about the perfect program, but about finding what works for you and what portions of each program are best for you. So like, even though I don't like, say, I'm not a fan of linear periodization, I can't say linear periodization is horrible because Eddie Cohn. Like, there's lots of guys that were strong as shit doing it. And like, I'm a feet out bencher. I don't like tucking my feet. So I teach people feet out, but I'm like, listen, I'm going to tell you right now that like tons of guys have done insane benches with their feet tucked under them. So I can't tell you it's wrong. I can just tell you what I prefer. And if you really set on this, I can coach that too. But you know, to think that there's this perfect right or wrong, or there's this perfect diet is just naive. I mean, if there was one program that truly worked for everybody, there would be one program.
Exactly. A lot of people have squatted 315. I'm just using that objectively, a lot of different ways with a lot of different programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think of it that way. Like, I've done conjugate, I've done linear periodization, and I pretty much get the different results all the time from each time. Right. Like, I squatted 315, just two different ways, you know, just for an example. I mean,
you name the program, I have at some point done it. Guarantee it. But I ended up the reason I like conjugate, the reason I'm a big fan of conjugate is I think it's one of the easiest to adjust and mold and tweak to the individual.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's interesting because have you found this too as well? This is what I kind of found with conjugate is by maybe I didn't change the max effort all the time, like every week. It might be once every 2 weeks kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But being able to change that up kind of kept things a little bit fresh. And for instance, I've heard other coaches talk about this, and I think it's an interesting thing where the athlete might not be, say, they might not be great to a low box squat or a low safety squat box, right? They might not be really good with that, with a safety squat bar on a low box, but they know in 2 weeks it's going to shift over to a safety squat bar to a high box, and they're a little bit better at that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Have you kind of found that at all, or
being able to change? Yeah, I mean, everybody always has preferences. And there was a story about the West Side guys when they would lift on, I think it was Sundays, and they would all get together and they're like, what should we do today? What should we do today? And the first person that went, I don't want to do that. It's like, all right, that's what we're doing then.
Yeah.
And like, what you hate the most, generally speaking, is probably what you need the most. But I mean, everybody has their movements that they really like. And the thing about it is if you do train conjugate and you're switching up your max efforts, you still get to do that one you like every now and then, but you also have to do the one that sucks every now and then.
Right.
Where people on, like, say, if you're doing linear periodization, you're just squatting all the time and just deadlifting all the time. Like, you don't have that variety. You don't have to work on those. I don't think it focuses as much on the weak points.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest weak points that you see with people? You talked about a little bit earlier, like the rhomboid and the traps. Everybody's obviously individual differences and stuff like that, but what are some of the main big ones, like one or two that you have seen over your time of coaching?
The rhomboids, middle and lower traps, almost everybody I train.
Yeah.
From young people to old people. And then what goes along with that is trap dominance. Part of the reason that's weak is because they become trap dominant. They have horrible posture. Most people are really weak in their hamstrings and glutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like the posterior chain just gets neglected. I think it's like I call it a mirror syndrome. Like people tend to work what they see in the mirror when what's really the most important is what they don't see in the mirror. Like, so you go to the guys in the gym are like, they work their biceps, their pecs, their abs. And it's like, dude, you know, when I'm looking at a strongman or a lifter or even an athlete, like I want to see their back. Their back's going to give me way more clue as to how good this person is than their pecs or their biceps. And then there's a lot of really bad, people have really bad movement patterns. And like some of those that I see will be people flexing their chest when it's like, dude, you're setting up for the bench. You need to squeeze your shoulder blades together and tight and pull and depress them, retraction and depression. Well, if you're pulling your flex tight before you, your pecs, even before you set up, how are you supposed to squeeze your shoulder blades together if your pecs are flexing? And then the same thing, I see a lot of people, they're pulling their knees in. And they're actually pulling their knees in because they're squeezing their adductors. It's like, well, wait a minute, you're supposed to be using your glutes and your hip flexors and pulling those knees out. Well, how are you going to pull your knees out if your adductors are trying to pull your knees in? Like, so I see a lot of people where their muscles are actually fighting each other, trying to get in the positions. And it's like, all your, that's just energy just floating away from where it should be going.
Exactly. That's the biggest one I see is people not understanding external rotation. They don't know how to root. Like, that's a big one.
Yeah, they like have no clue how to root. And then, but see, that's a funny thing too. Now that you go back to, you know, always learning and it continuing being a learning process. Rooting when I was competing is way different than I root now. And I was like a big time arched guy back then. Like I arched as hard as I could arch. Well, you know, Duffin's a friend of mine, and I think Duffin's like right up there with one of the smartest guys I think out there who, like, even though I don't always agree with Duffin, like I will listen and give credit to anything he says, and then I'll decide later. But I mean, I'm open to pretty much whatever he has to come up with because I just have that much faith in him. And man, he worked on me for probably a year and a half. And I actually had a buddy. We were up at Kabuki, and finally I'm like, F, and I said the whole word, F it, I'll try it, damn it, you finally convinced me. And so I started going more neutral back, and I was like, wow, this actually is way better. And now I teach neutral back because I believe in the greater effect of the bracing and everything. And through him, I actually changed how I rooted and modified my root, which I believe now is way better. Like, so it's, even though I wasn't, even when I changed that stuff, I wasn't competing. I was more working on clearing up my depression and stuff, but I've never stopped learning. I've never stopped trying to progress my knowledge and what I know. And I've never went, oh, this worked, I had a world record with this, doing it this way. Well, no, like world records are breaking. Like I'm falling down the list all the time, and I should be. Like, if you love the sport, you should want your records to fall because it has to progress. And the reason those guys are progressing is because they took they're learning from what we learned, and then they're expanding on it. Well, I even know I'm not going to ever compete at that level again. I'm probably never going to break any open world records again. It doesn't mean I want to stop learning. Like, I still want to continue learning.
That's why, like, I think it's so important with, like, you know, my generation of lifters now to be able to look at people like yourself, anybody that's an Elite FTS, that you guys are kind of like the trailblazers, other than as far as all of that, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so many things going on. Like, I'm sure you, I think I saw the awesome YouTube video, which I think anybody should go watch. You did the Ernie France kind of like tribute video on YouTube.
Yes,
which that was probably one of my favorite videos I've seen in a long time on YouTube. I want to say thank you for putting that up because that's awesome, man.
Like Ernie was I don't think people realize it. And I wonder too, with like, there's definitely, when you kind of fall out of the spotlight and powerlifting, like you fall off the planet pretty quick. Like people forget about you pretty quick. And I think that there's still, like, let's see, even with me, it was the guys that I grew up with, like John Cole and I can't think of anybody's names right now, but Don Reinhout, and like, dude, those guys were incredible, man. And I still think people should look up and go, well, wait a minute, what did these guys do at one at this time? And they didn't have the knowledge you have today. Like, they were doing this with just the knowledge they had then. And it was what those guys learned and what they progressed to the next generation and into the next generation. And like right now, there's some dudes putting up some crazy raw numbers. But if you really watch them and you watch how they train, they're taking little tidbits and they're expanding on it and expanding on it. And like, that's what it's all about. That's what's so cool about the sport.
I absolutely love that part of it and everything. So, Chad, as we wind down here, I want to go ahead and have you plug everything. How can people reach out to you on social media, YouTube, stuff like that?
Right now I have my Instagram, which is just under Chad Ikes. Then I have Courage Barbell, my YouTube channel, and I also have Courage Unlimited, which is a little more of my personal thoughts on society and things that are going on. And like, I tried to split them up because I didn't know if people, that way people could just go, here's the lifting stuff. And if I want to know what Chad believes about this or that, I can watch this other one. And then right now we're in the works. I'm working on some apparel, t-shirts and stuff that we're hoping to have up here in a couple months. And I'm starting doing some online training, but I'm going to keep that to minimal clients till I decide where I want to take that. And then I'm training people out of Reno, right now, where I have my regular clients, but I want to set up seminars for like small groups or people that, you know, if you get a couple guys together and go, hey, let's go to Reno and get a weekend in and do stuff like that. Cause I think it's strength training's, it's interesting. Like I never really, people always ask me why I didn't move to like Columbus and train at Westside or go train at one of the big gyms. And I don't think you necessarily have to do that. But you do still need to be around top athletes and you need to learn from those guys. And you need people around you that know, because even through my lifting, like I give a lot of credit to Dave and Wendler and those guys I learned from, but I give a lot of credit to my team because when I started my team, I taught all those guys. And the reason I taught them was like multifold. Me teaching them helped me learn. But then when they learned, they were able to look at me. So like I was one of the best squatters in the world, but I still would get bad habits. And it was the guys on my team that watched it and go, Chad, you're not, you know, you're letting your knees come in or you're not sitting back enough, or because as human beings, we're definitely defective creatures from the start. So what we see and think in here isn't always what our body's doing. And I have some funny stories about that too. When we first started with the technique, I was like, oh, I got this, man. And like my teammates are like, I'm teaching them. And they're like, well, wait a minute. You're not sitting back. I go, bullshit, I am too. You don't question me, man. And they would keep riding me. And eventually I'm like, that's it. I'm bringing a camcorder next week. And we video me and I watch it. And I'm like, son of a bitch, you're right. I'm not sitting back. so, after a while I finally wised up and I would just, if they go, you're not sitting back, I'm like, okay, I'll sit back more.
Oh man, that is so odd. That's a great story. That is such a great story. Obviously because of everything that's going on, I have to train in my basement by myself kind of thing, so I'm just completely reliant on my iPhone. And I go, thank God I am in 2021 now, where I have this iPhone here, whereas like you said, I'd have to get like a camcorder out, or like it'd be really tough. I mean, like it would honestly be really tough because you have to, like you said, objectively look at like what's going on. Like, did I brace correctly there? Did I arch correctly? Did I neutral back? Whatever it is. Cause yeah, we as human beings, we think, oh yeah, that was perfect. That was great. Then you go look back at the tape and you're like, man, I suck.
Yeah. Or there's even times now where I'm like, oh man, that looked horrible. That was, you'll even see like some of the videos I post, you'll hear me halfway through the squat going, that was shit. And then I look at it and I go, okay, well, it wasn't perfect, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it was. But that's a good point about the iPhones. It's like, I tell people all the time, I go, utilize technology, man. Like you have that phone with you all the time. It's not that hard to get a little tripod and set it up. And then, but then you still have to know what you're looking for. And even with like when I do my online clients now, we have once a week, we have to do a video chat. And I'm like, you have to send me videos of your training. Like and even the stupid supplemental stuff, like I need to see what you're doing and if you're doing it correctly. Because if I tell you to do a row and you're doing a row and you're doing it wrong, you're not working the muscle groups that I want you to work. So like, I need to know every exercise is being performed correctly. And So we all have that technology, but a lot of people don't use it. Or they go, they shoot everything from the front because it's going to be posted on Instagram. Like, dude, shoot one from an angle or shoot one from the side so you can actually see more what's going on. I mean, a front view is important sometimes, but for me and coaching wise, that's like the last view I need to see. Like, I'm more at a 45 view or a side view, depending on the lift. And if it's a bench, you know, they'll shoot it from the bottom. It's like, dude, I need to see where your elbows and your lats and all this other stuff. So like, people utilize the technology, but they don't utilize it correctly. Like, we're not looking to see if you got the lift. Like, I honestly don't give a shit if you get the lift. I want to know how you performed it and if you're holding the right technique and maintaining that stuff. I actually had a client, all my clients become friends, by the way. I don't know how that happens, but it just happens. Like, I find out I'm riding on the weekend with my clients and going to dinner with them and stuff. And I'm like, what the heck is going on here?
That's awesome.
But I had him, and then finally he misses a lift and he's all pissed off because he missed it. And I'm like, dude, that's awesome, man. And he's like, but I missed it. And I go, no, but you missed it in perfect technique. I go, now we're to the point where we can actually start lifting heavy because I know you're not going to completely fall apart. I go, that's progress. And I think we kind of talked about that earlier. That's one of the things with goals and stuff is like, I have to remind my people sometimes, like, no, wait, that's good. Like, and I'm a hard ass, but it's like, no, that's good. That's progress. I'm not so upset that you missed it because I'm happy that you missed it in good technique. So now we know, okay, well, that's where your strength level is right now, first of all, because it wasn't a technique fail. It wasn't a mental fail. You were in perfect technique. You just weren't strong enough. And we can fix that. That's easy. It's easier to get somebody stronger than to fix their technique, in my mind.
Yeah, strength's an easy thing. That's people soak it up like a sponge kind of thing. The technique is it takes so long to change a bad movement pattern. It takes so much time. It takes so much time to be able to re-ingrain that in somebody's brain, especially if they've been doing it for a long, long time. It's like, it's going to take some time. This is going to take some time. So,
and I actually have to remind myself on that one because I get frustrated because at this point, like, good squat technique. I'm like, what's the problem? Just sit back. Your body does it naturally if you just listen to it. Like, how hard is this? And they're like, yeah, right. It's so easy. And I have to remember, like, Chad, you started from the bottom too, dude. You didn't pick it up right away either. I remember 6 months of struggle trying to get it right.
Yeah, you were taking that 135, like you said, in the gym. You started there before, you know. That's the thing. And, like, you know, I think it's important to be able to look back on that. Like, hey, I started from here. I'm doing this. And just to understand that there is that process to everything. So
yeah, it's hard. And I was never like this great genetic athlete or anything. I actually picked up things really slow. And it's important to remember that with my clients and to keep them motivated, to let them know, you know, cause they don't know. I do know, like, I know how long it takes. I know how hard it is. And I'm a joker though. I like to laugh in the gym a lot. I mean, I actually, like, there's a lot of misconceptions about me because people watch my lifting videos and apparently they think I'm like that way all the time. Like, I can't get milk out of my refrigerator without sniffing ammonia or something. I want people to come to the gym and I want them to be happy there. But I also, when you get under the bar, I want that shit tight. Like, that's where I want the focus and the aggression and the intent and the execution. But when that lift's done, we don't need to be amped up the whole training session, you know? So I want them to have fun and I want them to feel good and I want them to be happy with what's going on. But at the same time, I actually had one of my college football players just came back and his first squat session, I'm just like, what the shit? What have you been doing at that school, man? What is your coach teaching you? What's he letting you get away with? And like, so he was upset at the end of it. And he's like, damn, man. Cause he didn't realize he slipped that much. And so I could tell when he left and I kind of teased him a little bit about it, but I'm like, that's actually good. Like, I want him to remember that. So his next squat session, he comes in like, that's it. Today I'm going to get it.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I think there is, you want them to be positive all the time, but like sometimes that negativity feeds us and makes us stronger.
Yeah. You hit it on the head there with something that I kind of want to go into a little bit real quick is you talked about the genetic thing. People think that you have to have all these great genetics to be able to do this or that and everything like that. I myself can say, like, I'm not a genetic, at least I was never really that great at sports myself. Like, I'm an average lifter at best. But, like, can you kind of dive into that a little bit on just, like, the genetic side of things, like you just talked about?
Oh, yeah, I can dive into almost anything. Like, for me, I grew up in a family where my dad is, like, super athletic. Like, my dad can pick up anything and just like that, and he's just good at it. And my brother was pretty good at everything. And for me, it always took a ton of work. And I remember, man, I've had some blowouts with my dad trying to coach me with stuff. And he always had trouble because he's like, come on, why can't you pick this up? Why can't you do this? Because for him, it was easy. And he didn't understand. He thought his kid, it would be easy too. And it wasn't. Like, it was hard for me. Like, I didn't pick stuff up well. I ended up being decent, you know, at football. I was okay at football and I was decent at throwing. And I had scholarships and stuff, but I turned away my scholarships in the Midwest to move to the West. But I was never great at anything and it was never easy. And even when I was in high school, I was strong. I was never maybe the fourth or fifth strongest kid on the football team. And I worked way harder than any of them. So even when I became as good as I was in powerlifting, it wasn't, I know a lot of people, you're just genetic. No, it's not genetics. One of the great things that I love about strength training is the fault of human beings. There's a lot of people that are naturally strong, so they just rely on that. Like, well, I'm just naturally strong. I'm just going to train and I'm going to get stronger. And they do well. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of them rely on that genetic ability. And it only takes you so far. Where a guy like me can come in and go, wait a minute. Like, I wouldn't say I have bad genetics, but I don't have great genetics. So I'm going to use my brain with the genetics that I do have, and I'm going to beat the crap out of a lot of guys that have great genetics. Now, if you take the great genetics and the brain, that's when you have like Ed Cones and like some of the greatest of the greats. But like, I almost feel like strength training is almost more fair than in life. I mean, in life, you see assholes get rich and you see great people that are homeless. And like, there's really no rhyme or reason. We're all just trying to do the best we can. But in strength, there's this sense of what I think of as right and wrong, where it's like, no, you can have great genetics and be good. But if you train hard and you're dedicated and you use your mind and brain, you can be on this platform with all these other guys. And another aspect of that is, and it took me a long time to learn this, the stronger you get, the less you're going to be able to train in terms of like very intense with frequency, because you now have good technique. So you're utilizing your body better. You've learned, your central nervous system has been able to generate more power. So every time you train, you're getting more out of your body than somebody else. And that's going to take even longer to heal. And I hated that. I hated that idea because, and if you watch my videos about the wisdom of Dave Tate, I talk about this because I trained every day and that's how I dealt with the world. It was my daily challenge of going to the gym and seeing how much I could beat the crap out of myself. And at one point Dave's like, okay, well, do you want to go to the gym and beat the crap out of yourself? Or do you want to be one of the best in the world? Because you're not going to do both. And that sucked for me because I'd love to go to the gym every single day. But then the more I thought about it and the older I got, I thought, well, that kind of makes sense. Like, you earned, you gave up all these things to get as strong as you are. And now you're at this higher level. Now you actually have a little bit of time where you actually need to have some hobbies to keep yourself out of the gym. But you actually earned that right to stay that strong without training every day, because you put in the time and you put in the work. And that actually seems fair to me in my mind, if I think about it.
I love that. You earned the right. You earned the right to be that strong.
Yeah.
Like, and it's so much more gratifying too, as well. Like, I did that. Like, I worked my butt off to get this. I didn't just rely on this and that, X, Y, Z. this was something that I did myself. I accomplished this. Now others helped you obviously along the way with your journeys and stuff like that. But I'm the one that put the hours underneath the squat bar. I'm the one that put the hours going to the seminars, resting, like actually resting, you know, people understanding like what is actual rest, you know, like, and I think that just nailed it on the head, man. Like that is a great, that right there is a perfect way to end this episode right there, because that is something that a lot of people need to take away, is you earned the right to be as strong as you were and to be in the position you were in. So many people just want to get things handed to them and don't want to earn that right.
And I think that's a mistake. I think there's, I'm going to go with this podcast as long as you want to go with it, because I continue to think of things to say. I think one of the problems with a lot of younger lifters and intermediate lifters is they look at top lifters and they assume what their journey was.
Yeah.
Oh, they had genetics. Oh, they're on drugs. Oh, they're this. Oh, they're that. It's like, well, no, like honestly, if you have any respect for a lifter, or you're like impressed with what he lifted, like, first of all, don't beat or degrade what he did, and take the time to go, well, wait a minute. What was that guy's first meet? When did he start lifting? I can guarantee you there's nobody at the top level that started lifting 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like they started lifting 10 or 15 years ago. And then new guys that go, well, I'm going to train like so-and-so. Well, you don't know what he did to be able to train like that. Because I can tell you right now what I did to bench 400 pounds, what I did to bench 500 pounds, what I did to bench 600 pounds. Like it was continually changing the whole time. Like it had to, because I got stronger, because my technique got better, you know, because my squat got bigger. So I may have needed more rest. Like everything changed. It was changing the whole time. And so you can't be a beginner and go, I want to train like this guy. Well, it took him 15 years to train the way he's training now.
I could be a perfect example of that. I look at some people, and I'm like, man, but then like you said, you have to look back, like what did they do in the beginning? Like one thing I noticed that a lot of guys did in the beginning is like their volumes were totally different than when they were at the very tippy top. Like they had just less volume. Like I'm in that perfect phase where I can take a little bit more volume over time and grow, like get stronger kind of thing, and fine tune my technique. So when I do get a lot stronger, I'm able to handle those loads, because over time, like we keep going back to this, like time of essence, like time is everything kind of thing.
It is.
It goes back to like, you almost have to reverse engineer this. If you're like, everybody talks about reverse engineering, like football for strength and conditioning or volleyball or whatever, but like not very many people reverse engineer powerlifting in itself. And everything like that. I know I've had other people on here talk about that, but it's just something over time that's just going to, you have to constantly calculate. You have to be really calculated with what you do, in my opinion, especially when you get to the top level, I'm assuming.
Yeah. And most lifters, they learned as they progressed. Like, I think if you ask most top lifters, I don't think you could teach. There's a lot of stuff you can't teach. It has to be learned. Like you have to go through it before it really sinks in and you really understand it. I think, because I mean, there's things that I heard and understood. Like George Halbert was one of the first guys that I heard on a high level that I respected that goes, listen, as you get stronger, you're going to need more recovery time. Yeah. Like nobody was saying that. And like, I grew up reading all the magazines where it's like, well, you just build the tolerance to it. Like you're not going to, you may build a tolerance to running. You may build a tolerance to general strength training, but like, if you're talking max effort, like true max effort stuff, your central nervous system is only going to recover so fast. Like, and I know of no real ways to completely increase that. Like it's only going to recover so fast. So there's going to be a point where you're pushing your body so hard in every session that you either need to do more GPP work, GPP sessions, and less heavy sessions, or you need more time in between the heavy session.
Yeah.
And that's the progression of learning as you're going. Like who can say what it is? Well, you can't really say what it is because everybody's different. Like I have horrible sleep issues, so my recovery sucks. So most people are going to be able to train more than I train. Like even when I had my team, like I needed more deloads. I needed more time off than anybody else on my team. And then some of the guys that slept really good and normal, they were able to crank and crank and crank and crank and crank. you know, and it just changes. And that takes me into another one where I think if I was to give advice to lifters, it would be stop focusing so much on programming and focus on recovery. Like, everybody wants to talk about programming. Everybody wants to know what rep scheme, what percentages, what weight. Like, and I'm like, oh my Lord, like, I'm so tired of hearing that stuff. Like, why don't you people focus on your recovery, focus on your nutrition, like focus on sleep. Like, going to the gym is easy. If you go to the gym and push yourself, you'll get stronger. Like I said, I've known tons of the top guys in the world, and we all train different. I mean, try to find two of the top, even the same guys at Westside actually train a little different. They're all training conjugate, but they're training like different forms of it. Yep. Like, so stop trying to like have this certain one program and accept that, listen, there isn't one. I need to learn what my body needs, but I really need to focus on training. I remember I went to one of Stan Efferding's vertical diet seminars. And my biggest takeaway from that was when he goes, man, I like lifting every day and I like lifting heavy. So I make sure to get to bed on time every day. And I went, there you go. There's a guy that's putting recovery ahead of everything else. And there's also a guy who's insanely strong, who's older and insanely ripped. Like, if there's a guy to listen to, like, he's impressive.
And it's such low hanging fruit. Like, you hear intermediate lifters, beginning lifters are like, oh, I just ran 5-3-1. Now I'm going to go do conjugate. Now I'm going to go do this. Now I'm going to do that. Okay. Let's stop. How did you sleep over the last month? Did you get 7 to 9 hours? How much alcohol are you having? How much water are you drinking? How many rest days are you taking in between? Are you actually resting on those rest days? How many GPP says, you know, but to go back to just the beginning, how much water, how much sleep, and what are you eating?
Yeah.
I guarantee if you clean those three things up, everything else will change. Like, for instance, like when I have a good, you know, I've got a 6-month son, so getting a good night's sleep can be kind of tough sometimes.
Yeah.
But if I get my 7 to 9 hours, I will wake up and I will look different in the mirror. Like, you can just see a difference in the mirror from a body composition wise. That's such low hanging fruit. Like,
yeah, just sleep. It's the lowest hanging fruit. Like, yeah, for me, sleep is a struggle, but for most people, it's not. Like, most people sleep less because they're up like watching video games or movies or they're out with their buddies. And it's like, dude, just go home and go to bed, man. Yeah. And it's funny because I'm working on an article on sleep right now because of my, and I've actually sat down when I had my team, we sat down and talked about this, and my sleep issues were actually a benefit for everybody else because I could easily pick up as a coach. And even back when I had my team, we always asked each other questions, you know, how's your appetite? How's your flexibility? You know, how are you feel? How are you just feeling, like, mentally? How are you feeling? How's your sleep? And we were checking for signs of overtraining. And what I found out was that the guys that sleep normal, their sleep turns into my good sleep when they start overtraining. So like if one of my guys came in and he's like, man, he goes, it took me a long time to fall asleep. And then they're like, I just kept waking up every 20 or 30 minutes. Like, I couldn't stay asleep. I'm like, that's it, dude, deload. Like, you're deloading for a week or until your sleep gets better at least. And once your sleep gets better, we're deloading for another half a week. And then their sleep would start going good again. Bam, everything starts going up. And then with me, because of the way my sleep is, I can see all these subtle things that most people don't see. Like you said, like I get up in the mirror and you can see a difference in my face whether I slept or not. And part of that is inflammation. You not get enough sleep, you're going to be inflamed. And like my motor skills change. Like, I'll drop when my sleep's bad, I drop a lot of stuff. My 73-year-old client, which is interesting too, I've had him for about a month or so, and he has some inner ear issues, which they're not able to fix. But I think that if we get his strength better and we work on his balance, I think we can maybe not totally cure it, but get it better. which we already have, even as even the other day, he's like, my wife is amazed at how much I've changed in just a month. And I'm like, but what's really funny is I ask him, I ask all my clients these same questions. The days where his sleep is messed up because he was stressed or whatever, his balance is off. Yep. When he gets a good night of sleep, it's better. And I'm like, I don't think people understand the actual effect and how important quality sleep is. Like, getting enough sleep is one thing, but getting quality sleep is another thing altogether.
Having good sleep hygiene is important. Look that up. JM has a great article on Elite FTS in regards to that, where he talked about, like, what is sleep hygiene and everything. That was an article that really kind of changed my thoughts on sleeping.
I wish I could put people through a week of my life. And it, cause I think if they went through a week of my life, they'd be like, holy shit, I'm going to start sleeping more. a lot of people, and honestly, if you think about it, okay, when you have a 6 month old, so you might, is that your only kid?
Yes, that's our only kid. Yeah.
Okay. When they get older, you're going to find out when they're 2, 3, 4, when they don't take naps, they're a huge pain in the butt.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, we're adults. We're not really all that different. So, like, it's funny when you see people get tired, if you watch and you pay attention, and my whole life I've been a people watcher, you'll see people start getting crabby. They'll get set off faster. They'll get frustrated easier, all just because they're not getting enough sleep. But they don't ever take the time to realize that, hey, wait a minute, maybe I'm so pissed off today because I need some more sleep.
Yep. Easy, low-hanging fruit, in my opinion. Same with the nutrition thing. Like, we know what's good. Well, I don't want to get in the whole good and bad thing. You know what I mean? But, like, you understand, like, you can make the decisions on everything, right? Like, I know I'm going to get my protein after my workout. I'm going to get my good carbohydrates after I work out. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Like, I'm going to find what works with me best. Like, maybe I'm not good with fiber, or maybe I'm better with fiber, you know, kind of things. Like, I'm going to work with somebody. I'm going to find somebody thing. Like, such low hanging fruit as far as, like, hydration. Like, did I hydrate before I worked out? Like, I remember I had somebody on the podcast here. They would ask their client a question of, like, did you drink water today? And they'd be like, yes. Well, they drank one bottle of water throughout the day. Instead, he would change it now to being like, how much water did you drink today? You know, like, such easy thing.
Yeah. Did you eat enough? Okay. Well, how much did you eat? Which is an amazing one. Cause that's another one where people, I don't think people have any idea. I have people like, oh yeah, I got 600 grams of protein in. I go, do you really understand how many 600 grams of protein is? You didn't get 600 grams of protein. Trust me.
No.
Oh, no, I did. I swear. I had like 2 chicken breasts. Well, I don't know what app you looked that up on, but that's not it.
No, that's not
it. But it's funny, though, because here's another funny note. When I was training clients at one of the local gyms, and after people would work with me for a while, we would be walking through the gym, and they'd go, blinders, Chad, blinders, blinders, put your blinders on, because they knew how frustrating it was for me to look around and see people doing shit stupid. Or like with horrible technique and stuff. And they're like, don't even look, Chad. You're just going to get mad. Like, walk by. Don't look. Don't look to your right, Chad. And, but like, it frustrates me because I see, especially young lifters. I see so many young lifters in the gym, and I know that they're working hard. I mean, they're physically working hard, which still doesn't mean that it doesn't mean they have intensity. Doesn't mean they have intent or execution, but physically they are working hard. But they're not getting anywhere near the reward they could be getting because their technique sucks and they won't learn technique. Or like you said, they're not putting in the time for the sleep. They're not putting in the time to nutrition. It's like, if you're going to spend all that much time in the gym beating the hell out of yourself, why wouldn't you go ahead and spend that little bit of extra time making sure your nutrition's good, making sure your sleep's good? Like, spend some time stretching, spend some time learning technique. Like, when I have beginning clients here, I'm like, wow, you really have this weakness. Like, your back is really weak, man. And like, some of them are like, and I'm like, no, that's a good thing. Like, we have to know the weakness in order to fix it. And like, right now you could bench more, but your rhomboids are so weak, it's limiting your bench. Well, now we know what we need to strengthen. Like, finding a weak point is good. This is a good thing, because say you bench 315 right now, you actually have the capability with good technique of benching 350. Like, you're not benching what your muscles could actually do because of poor technique and certain weaknesses.
I don't think most people know what their weaknesses are. I think that's the hard part, because they only focus on the strengths, in my opinion.
They do focus on the strength, and they don't, you know, like a lot of people are like, well, I get people send me videos. They're like, hey, my technique's really good. And I'm like, send me a video. And it's horrible. And so it's like, if you have bad technique, I don't know if something is a muscular weakness or if it's a technique weakness. Like, I need a person to understand technique first and be able to execute that technique. Then I can truly see what their muscular weaknesses are. But when somebody squats like complete shit and they're like, what's my weakness? I go, your weakness is your technique sucks. That's your weakness.
Exactly. And it goes back to what you said about your one client earlier. It's like, their technique was perfect and they just failed. Now we can build up some strength. We can figure out what the weak points of the actual squat are, because your technique's good. It's where we want it to be. Now we can start building up and everything like that. Again, it starts from the ground level of technique. Like, we got to hammer that technique. It's so important. Yeah. To hammer those good motor patterns down.
And that's where, when people first start with me, I'm like, listen, I could probably tweak a couple things to get your bench up over the next couple weeks, but in the long run, that's not going to do us any good. Like, I basically want to start from the ground up and let's rebuild your base strong, so that we're not going to make gains in 2 weeks. We're going to make gains over the next 2 years, and it's going to keep going, and longer than that, you know. Like, you build, if you build, it's in like, cause like we said, it took me 10 years to go from 17 to 27. But if I didn't build the base, I would have made some gains and got stuck. I guarantee you, if I would have never met Dave Tate, I might've squatted maybe 900 at some point, but I don't think I would have ever got past that. You know, if I wouldn't have met Dave and went, okay, this is ground up foundation changing shit here, and then we're going to build from there.
Yep, I agree. You talked about some great stuff on your YouTube. I think even on your Instagram, where you talked about, like, you were figuring out some of your gear and, like, a belt, if you knew how to properly brace, like, that could potentially add like 100 pounds onto your total kind of thing. Like, little things like that add up over time, especially if you're a high competitive power lifter and, like, it's just a regular person. Like, if you're going to use something, know how you're using it and understand, like, where can I get the benefits of this at, you know? Like, you kind of gave me a big aha moment with one of your videos where you were talking about wrist straps. Like, do you wear the wrist straps just to wear them, or how are you using those to, like, actually benefit you and stuff like that, you know? It's small little things like that that kind of go overlooked, just like we talked about with the sleep and nutrition and everything like that.
Yeah, and let's face it, wraps and belts aren't really for safety. They're to help us lift more. I mean, wrapping your knees really isn't going to change a whole lot. You can still hurt your knees in wraps. You know, I crashed with 1170, or I think it was 1,000. I've crashed twice with big weights. And with one of them, I, like, strained my medial collateral ligament. Well, if that knee wrap is so great, how did I do that? Like, it doesn't really help me, but it allows me to lift more weight. That's why I wear wraps, because it lets me lift more weight. And that's why I don't wear them all the time, because actually what wraps do is they take the tension off of, they take some of the tension off of the tendons and the ligaments, but those tendons and ligaments need that tension to grow. That's what spurs them to grow and get stronger. So you don't want to wear your wraps all the time, but you do want to know how to wear them. And if you're going to wear them in a meet, you might as well get as much weight as you can out of them. I mean, if you're not getting 50 pounds out of your knee wraps, you need to learn how to wrap.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big thing that I've been toying with here recently, is like, I don't really I'll use them for one set. It'll be my last set. I want to build, like you said, because I'm going to use them in the meet. So I need to obviously know how to wrap them, use them and everything like that. But that's what I've done my last couple meets, or my last meet was like, I'll use them for that last set. Like, I don't want to be totally reliant on them, but right. I got to be able to know what this is going to feel like when I get to the platform.
Exactly. Yeah. And know to hit depth and still feel it with the wraps on.
Exactly.
Like when I was competing, people had asked me that question, and I go, listen, I won't put wraps on unless I'm over 1,000 pounds. Like, there's no way I'm putting wraps on unless I'm over 1,000 pounds.
Wow.
Because I hate, if you wrap wraps right, they suck.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I was just having that conversation with somebody. You know, I'm self-wrapping and it sucks. I'm like, oh God, if I had somebody else, it'd suck even more. You know, it's like, I honestly hate wearing them, but I want to lift as much weight as I possibly can. So
I'm gonna put them on for my opener, and that's about it. Other than that, I don't want the damn things on.
Exactly. Chad, go ahead and wind down here, man. Again, can you go ahead and plug all your social media and YouTube? Because I want people to be able to look at this. I love your YouTube. Can you plug that in your social media again?
Yeah, my YouTube is Courage Unlimited. Or no, wait. Yeah, Courage Unlimited is kind of like my rants on the world and life, and which are actually funny how, for me, life and the gym actually correlate. Like, lessons that I learned in the gym help me in life, and some of the lessons I've learned in life help in the gym. So I think it's all correlated, but that's Courage Unlimited is that YouTube channel. And then Courage Barbell is my all just training YouTube channel. And I've had a couple weeks dealing with some stuff. So I'm hoping to get back to putting regular videos up this week on that one. And then you can get me on Instagram with just Chad Ikes. And right now that's pretty much all I have. We're working on a website for the t-shirts and stuff that we got coming out, but I haven't actually finished that yet.
Well, Chad, I can't thank you enough for being a guest on this week's episode.
I appreciate you having me. I had fun.
Absolutely, man. Well, guys, go follow him. If you aren't already, which you should be, go look up his YouTube stuff. When he gets those apparel out, make sure you buy all that up too as well. And everybody, stay strong.